Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, and welcome to another edition of the Discord Social and Unlock Your Podcast. Today I am joined by my good friend, Joanna Schmaldi, for the Namaste Chronicle. Hi, Joanna, is that you?
It's me. Hello? Hello?
Hello?
Salima?
Hi, Joanna, is that you?
Yes, it's me. Can you hear me?
Hi. I can hear you now. I'm sorry we had a little bit of difficulty there.
Sorry, I called in and then my phone disconnected me and now I'm back. So, namaste.
Namaste. Namaste, Joanna. Thank you for joining me for this month in musing that we want to do. And today I think what we really want to cover is sort of like this week on Twitter, in Twitter shenanigans, and we want to talk about some missed FNF opportunities, right?
Yes, we do. Which okay. There's many, but we're going to just zone in on one in particular today. So
Exactly. There are so many. This can be a recurring feature of our hopefully recurring podcast. So just give me 1 second to figure out my mic issues. I probably should have done a test run, but, you know, what would a podcast be if we weren't flying by the seat of our pants, right?
No, exactly. The spontaneity.
Okay, so hang on 1 second.
Okay.
Okay, can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Perfect. Okay. So let's start, if you don't mind, the week on Twitter. I will lead us off so that you can sort of figure out, you know, what time.
Okay, wait, I can't hear you really well.
I'm going to start with who I think wins Twitter this week and almost ever. And I know you need to do this, so this should be a good play for us. Let's talk about
Lin-Manuel Miranda. Wait, Salima?
Yeah?
I can't hear you very well. I'm sorry.
Okay, can you hear me now?
Now I can hear you. Oh, geez. I'm sorry. It went, like, really, like, tunnel. I could hardly hear what you were saying.
Okay. We'll work this out a different way. How about now?
Now I can, yes.
Okay, great. I am sorry about that. We might have to do this again.
I hate to have you repeat that, but can you do that? This is kind of indicative of the week. Like, nothing's kind of going the way.
I know, right? This is it. So, okay, we're just going to keep this real simple. I was like, let's start with who I think wins Twitter this week and almost every week, and I know you agree with me, so it should be a fun place to start. Lin-Manuel Miranda, I think, has one of the best Twitter presences there is.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, it's encouraging. He tweets about, I mean, obviously, until very recently, he was actively participating in Hamilton, the juggernaut that he wrote, you know, composed, and all of that. But he also is just so encouraging, and there's nothing that I feel is alienating about his Twitter presence. So I wondered if you could talk to me about, like, what you enjoy about following him on Twitter and how you came to follow him.
I came to follow him because you were following him because you would retweet him. So I just, there's probably 3 or 4 times that you had retweeted him that I saw. And I loved the messages. So then I followed him. And I haven't even listened to any of the Hamilton musical music or anything. But I have to do that when I have some time. But I even love how he types out his Twitter message. The way his style of it, and it's just like, it's very sweet, and like you said, very encouraging and positive, and I actually did love, too, when he was tweeting about the show, how he would call out people in the audience who were taking pictures and things, because you're not allowed to do that, but he always kind of had a classy way of doing so, but I love, like, the word that's coming to mind is, like, the prose of how he writes his tweets. And he always says good night, or he says good morning, or he says your believe in yourself. And the way, but the way he says it isn't the way you always hear it. So it's just kind of, I really enjoy him, and it's one of the follows on there that I'm really happy that I don't follow a lot of celebrities. It's very, very few, and he's one that I just really enjoy, and I'm so glad that I added him to my list. And you've inspired me to listen to that soundtrack because I know you love it.
Oh, I promise you, Joanna, it's tremendous. I'm one of those people who has not seen Hamilton on Broadway. I mean, it's prohibitively expensive because it's such a juggernaut, but it definitely lives up to its hype. It's inventive and it's interesting, and it, you know, just, but like you said, because of that, because he's a writer, because he's a creator and a musician, you feel that coming through in his tweets, and it makes them just a joy to read. Because I think celebrities one of their issues on social media is balancing how much of their lives should be consumable for the public, you know, so it's about the art, it's about the product or the project, and then there's like, okay, how much of my own life am I going to share? And it's probably an ongoing dialogue that every person of any, you know, degree of fame or celebrity has with him or herself. It's like, okay, is this picture okay, or am I crossing, you know, some invisible boundary that I have with myself? You know, it's okay to show a picture of me at my house, but maybe like too much of that. And because I think what Twitter does is it erases, it gives many people the illusion of access that they may not have. And you have to remember, this is still a curated presence. Just because you don't see it on Twitter doesn't mean it didn't happen. And just because you see something on Twitter that is purporting to be something doesn't mean that's what it is either. So we've seen some other weirdness on Twitter this week, and out of necessity, I think we kind of have to be circumspect about it. But we saw a struggle with like what should be available for consumption and what shouldn't. And we sort of watched a little drama play out. So I'll let you talk a little bit about that because I know you have.
That was interesting to see. That was both. Hopeful and heartbreaking, I think, is how I had kind of described it to you, too, because so many people had reacted to what was tweeted. But what bothered me about what happened there is that there's a loss of journalistic integrity now because of social media, and journalists, quote-unquote, don't have to maybe go after a story or really research for something. They can just hop on social media, check trending, and if a celebrity happened to say something, they can just jump on it, and before you know it, it's everywhere, and which maybe wasn't the intention of who tweeted that out. They were just, you know, sharing something, and they're, you know, trusting of their followers, and they probably weren't thinking this is going to really get legs and you know, really start rolling. And so we saw that play out, which, you know, bothered me because I just feel like it gets taken out of context. We, like you said, we only get a snippet. Twitter gives us so very little. And so obviously that person shared something very personal with, you know, 42,000 people that are following. But then it gets taken and shared and people start commenting and it just kind of takes on its own life. And so then we saw it kind of come back around and you know, it continues to go on with, you know, people reaching out and things. And I don't know how long that will continue to go on, but which is helping many people. But I just get so bothered by the fact that these people in media don't have to really, like, do the legwork or use any discretion or sensitivity towards the story they're reporting, basically. Everything's sensationalized, if that makes any sense, I just said. But,
no, it makes complete sense. Because right now, talk about this culture of consumerism, like the consumerism of information. Everything is consumable. If you can't repackage it, Instagram it, and I'm very active on social media, so this is not meant to be a disparagement of that, but journalism anymore, and I hope you hear the silent quotation marks. It's tweets. you know? And I was I was on Twitter a couple of years ago, and a question came across on not the Frisco and Felicia timeline, but my own one at Shalima Peets, where my list of people I follow is a little bit different. It's a bit more tailored to me as a person and not me as a fan, you know, slash enthusiast for
right.
Frisco and Felicia, obviously. And I think the question was put to, you know, writers and media people, what is the one thing you would tell journalism students today? And I saw a tweet that said, a tweet is not a story. A tweet is not a story. Because literally what they do is they like link to and embed people's tweets and they let that speak for itself. So it's laziness because you don't have to fact check because this person just said it, you know.
Right.
Whereas, you know,
right.
a tweet coming from any person is, you know, may or may not be factual. It may or may not be the full story. It's like 140 characters out of context.
Right.
And this week, you know,
like,
yeah.
Yeah, write a backup story to it. Or, yeah, exactly what you said. Yeah.
Right. Right. And also, something that frustrates me, and it's because of the nature of the platform, Twitter, you know, is a constant stream. It's just constant information, and it's like ticker tape, you know. So I try to look at a person's Twitter presence in full context so that when I see a tweet that I'm like, oh, that's a little bit strange, or that's weird, or that's kind of throwback to the way this person was tweeting 2 or 3 years ago. Most people aren't reading Twitter that way. They're reading tweets in isolation and making full judgments, you know, about, and these stories, these media pieces regurgitate articles that they've had before. So it's like, here's a new tweet, but we can't just have the story that's like, look at this tweet. It's like, and in 1985, this person did this, and here's a quote, and here's some random pictures that we already bought that we can, like, they've become stock photos for us. So, yeah, Twitter has been.
Yeah, there's no effort. There's no effort to it. My journalism professor would be mortified if there's no effort to it. There's no, you know, I'm not saying that about all people that are in media or all people that are journalists. There's many with integrity and everything, but I think that we have, it's really, I personally, because of my lifestyle and having 3 young children and the busyness that comes with that, I don't get to watch the news. I hardly get to read it, whatever. So Twitter has become for me like a news source, because I'll follow, you know, the different major news outlets, or I'll go to the moment and I'll see what's going on. So, but if I see something, and just like you said, that seems kind of out of the ordinary, I try to take the time to go through it and get both sides of the story, because I can't just take people's tweets and reaction to that story as fact, because it's all opinion. So it's like I have to be really careful about what I'm consuming on my own, but I'm sure a lot of people do that too. They try to be conscious of it, but it's very interesting. The Twitter world, say it, the Twitterverse.
Well, I've been really impressed with the Twitter account for Christina Wagner's new movie, The Storyteller, because they're really giving an inside look at the production end. Like, basically, this is how you make a movie from day one to, you know, the photos and the information and the Instagram account that accompanies that has been, I don't know, it's a privileged seat, if you will, to have. And they know what their errand is. And I think the most successful Twitter accounts are faithful to their errand. They're like, we're not here to be pithy. We're not going to be sharing motivational quotes. You know, what we're going to do is, you know, document the filmmaking process. And now when you're just an average, you know, person and you need to diversify, I mean, I'm not opposed to motivational quotes, you know, but they're not trying to do the most. They're not being extra. They're like, this is what I do. And even celebrities, where their goal is like, all I do is I tell you what I'm up to professionally. Like, you're not going to see Instagrams of my family, you know, so it's been a really successful account because that account understands what it's about. I don't know if you follow Halle Berry on Twitter, but it's been really, you know, I'll tell you why. It's like very non-stressful. And some people stress me out because you're like, oh, God, you shouldn't have tweeted that. You know, you can sort of internally cringe. Her tweets are like these very artistic Instagram photos of flowers or her children's feet, you know, really like she just walks this fine line between, you know, you're getting a little bit of me, but in no way, you know, beyond, you know, a certain line. It's very artistic.
Right, right.
It's, you know, messages of hope. You know, it's like she sort of, in a circumspect way, reacts to, you know, world tragedies, and God knows we've had plenty of those in the last, you know,
yes,
2 years, but especially this last month. And I think you'd like her Twitter presence. And I saw a media professor comment and say, Hallie has got it right. Flowers, children, landscapes. But you know what I mean? That's it.
Yeah.
That is how not to be a vexation on Twitter.
That reminds me of Emma Scams. I like her feed on Twitter, and I started following her.
Oh,
Instagram.
I love
Emma
Scams.
She does
Emma
a lot of
feed.
Artsy. Yeah. She's really – and then when she does respond to fans, she's so gracious and, you know, wonderful. She does keep it about what she's doing, or she has fantastic photographs she takes. She's really talented. So I think that's another Instagram that you had maybe – alerted me to, that I started following her. But back to the storyteller, I've been really enjoying their build-up that they're doing, because I'm seeing, you know, behind the scenes of the actual storyteller account, and then there's another one of the co-writers on it, I believe her name's Rachel Mole, that's sharing a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's really interesting to me, because I love seeing that behind the scenes thing. And I was thinking the other day, they really are doing it right, because they're using it, just like you said, for the exact purpose that they need it to do, to, you know, gain interest in the movie. And so people are, you know, like saying, commenting, oh, can't wait to see this. And, you know, without giving too much away, they're really, you know, building interest in the story. So I hope it's successful. I hope I do. I look forward to seeing it. And
I hope so,
hopefully,
too. I hope so, too.
Yeah. And it's exciting that Peter's in it. I have to mention Peter Wagner is going to be in it. I think that's fun for him, and working with his mom. So that'll be cool to see, you know, to see that happen, play out on screen. So that'll be fun.
Indeed. Well, yeah, it will be. Now, just before we got on line, you know, I know that between the two of us, we follow not many, but a couple of, you know, soap bloggers, and,
yeah,
you know, I don't find myself often on the same page in terms of assessment of, like, quality or, you know, character development or anything with those guys, but a few of them are really fun. But there was one that you shot to me via private message that I thought it would be a missed opportunity before we transition to FNF's missed opportunity from the Asian Quarter storyline. Somebody, you know, I don't want to call anybody out by name, because it's not meant to be combative. This is a person whose Twitter presence I generally enjoy, because he's very funny. But
yes,
he likened something happening on current General Hospital as being like old school make us run home to, like, watch. And you were like,
yeah,
this person is delusional. So maybe we should talk about, like, the kind
that's
of
real
tweets
people,
you see about
yeah
the soaps. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I saw that, and like you said, I normally really enjoy, he's very funny, and I like following him, but he was referring to two characters on there now, and I have not watched the show since 2013. I just, you know, we all know that, but I see enough about it on Twitter from people I follow, and just, you know, things that come up. So I kind of feel like I know what's going on in the show without really wanting to, but the characters he showed in reference to, I was like, what are you talking about? Like, they are, one of them is not, was made up, okay, the character. And the other one has
right
ties to legacy people. But I'm like, there's nothing about that show now, ever in the future, and even the last, like, 10 years, that, if not more, has any throwback to when we would rush home from school at 3 o'clock and would watch it. Because it's over. It's done. It's done.
Right.
And I feel like the point about that show or any of the shows, believe me, I, you know, watched As the World Turns forever. I watched General Hospital forever. I think it's amazing that these shows, you know, lasted so long, and I think it's fantastic. But the genre has changed things have changed. It's not the same, and the people running it do not want it to be the same, which I understand. You can't have it be exactly the same as it was in the 80s. It's not going to happen. But I feel like what happens is people don't they settle for mediocrity, and like mediocre or less than is fine. And well, they're giving us a little bit of this, and it's okay. And it's not like you, if you love something and you're been devoted to it for a long time, demand that they give you the quality that they're supposed to. You're the consumer. You're consuming this product, right, just like you had said. And I see that so much on Twitter, like, oh, well, they, you know, they mentioned Frisco, and I haven't seen this lately. I'm just making an example. So maybe he'll come back. No, he's not, because they don't know how to write for him, and they don't know how to write for SNF, and it's not going to happen. And just because they give you a nibble of something, it's like, you know, it's not the quality that you want. And I've seen with the DNA fans, I follow all of them, and, you know, now they kill Duke, and then they give him a son. Like, what? Like, you had him on the show with Anna Devane, and there was a story there, and you don't do it. So it's like, I feel like people keep watching it because they're just hoping that they're going to get something. And it's like, but I'm veering off topic a little bit, but I feel like I just keep seeing this, like, I'll just take what I can get sort of thing. And that bugs me.
Right.
And,
I know what you mean.
I know people love,
I know what you mean.
You know, I know. So I think I'm done with my rant.
Well, that's okay. Your rant is actually a great segue into our golden age, you know, of General Hospital. I understand that it had, like, it's a second golden age in the 90s, but I wasn't watching then, so, you know, I don't care about that. I care about my GH, which is, like, 1984 to 1987, and then 89 to 91, and then I was out.
So there you go.
I'm proclaiming that's the golden age of General Hospital. So let's talk about what we sort of discovered this week as a missed opportunity. I mean, we talk about missed opportunities for Frisco and Felicia all the time, scenes we wish had happened. So it's sort of an outlier in terms of my taste where the, like, men's aesthetic is concerned, because I typically like a clean-shaven guy, but I am all about Asian Quarter Frisco, like that hair length, that beard, and then I'm like, wow, I'm really attracted to Al Pacino and Serpico. So clearly, you know, there's a theme here. And for whatever reason this week, I found this GIF from Serpico that I had forgotten all about, where Al Pacino is obviously in the bathtub with his love interest, you know, and the beard and the hair. And I'm like, damn it, we shouldn't have had this with Frisco and Felicia. So I thought, you know, we have about 6 minutes left. Let's talk about what a bathtub scene in the Asian Quarter might have been like. And I'm just going to let you wax rhapsodic about that, and I'll chime in if it's necessary.
Yes, please do, because I've been thinking about this since you mentioned that, and I saw that gift of the what scene. So I think I've gone over every AQ scene in my head where I was trying to think where that could have fit in. And I keep going back to the end when they're at Robert Scorpio's house and Frisco is just filthy because he's been in the catacombs and they, you know, have pulled him out of that. And Frisco says he's, you know, and his future is a shower and his lady, you know? So I'm like, why not then? That would have been perfect.
Right.
But we get them
dead
the next day all clean, right? Take him home.
Right.
The guy hasn't had a bath in what? We don't know how many months, okay? And so that would have been perfect. Perfect. My 10-year-old self would have remembered that. Like, I would understand it better, but that would have been a perfect, I think, scene. But there's probably so many. I mean, we kind of got, you know, we got her taking care of him when he was, had been really beat up and injured when she went to Olin's apartment, but that he was too, he was not able to, that wouldn't have been good. I think after the catacombs at the end would have been a nice, part there. I don't know if you have any other.
It would have been really intimate too, because what struck me about, and I mean, I've seen Serpico, I own Serpico, but I haven't watched it in a long time. And you know, what strikes me about that gif of that scene, which I don't even recall, is just the way he is looking at her, and you don't even, in the gift frame, you don't even see the woman he's looking at, but you know how he feels about her from just the smallest, you know, the smallest, most intimate glance he gives her, you know, in that context. And
that,
I think that would have been wonderful. I mean, I joked on Twitter last week that the older I get, the more I realize that the version of FNF I really wanted is something akin to, like, Cinemax After Dark. that might have to do more with the fact that I'm, you know, 40-something, 40, almost 43. but even as a kid, I'm like, I need more love scenes. Not, but I realize it's not because I was, you know, a child with a hyper degree or a hyper need to see sexualized scenes, but that I knew that in the context of those scenes, that's where you would get more intimacy. Like, the emotional intimacy is where that could really be displayed. Like, FNF missed out on all, like, the bathing-related scenes, because not even a year later, you got characters in the shower together. And I'm like, what? They were always referring to it. Yeah, that would have been, like you said, he was filthy, and that's something Felicia would have wanted to do. There's no way she didn't take a shower with him, you know, after they get back home from that ordeal.
And
so,
I think that that would have been a good segue there, because, like, in that scene at Robert Scorpio's house, they are, like, they never let go of each other. You know, like, that's the scene. I think, like, Katrina will, like,
capitalize
on
the hands. Oh, there's so much intimacy there. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There's so much with the, you know, the hand holding, and that they get up and they walk together, and she's holding his jacket, and you're not even, the frame isn't even really focused on them. And that's just one of the scenes I watch so much, because there's just the looks between them, and just, you know, they just, it was just played so well, or it was real.
Yes.
So
there is no way. Because what I always say, I mean, I'm going to take full credit for pointing out the subtext in that scene. Yes, you're absolutely right. Katrina screencaps it a lot, but that's because I called that out on Twitter and did it first.
Yeah.
I'm only saying that because I always say, if the camera is not focused on it or catches it only incidentally, it wasn't scripted. Because it's a waste to be doing things the camera does not pick up, you know? And what I mean by waste is, it's certainly not something that they need for the scene to move it, because if they did, there would be a camera direction pan in on. Whereas I can tell that in that scene, what the camera is doing, because it's looking at everything, is it's catching the fact that they're holding hands. But that wasn't like, there might have been a general direction, you know, Felicia stays by Frisco's side all throughout the scene, but I always go back to Jack's Where Are They Now interview from OWN, where he said we were so emotionally connected. And I think that if you look at any scene pretty much from late 84 to 87 when he leaves, if there's nothing for FNF to be doing with their hands, they're holding them. And I think that that was coming from Jack and Christina. I don't think that that was always a script direction. I just don't, you know?
No, there's times in Laurelton that, like, they're out of the frame, and you see them, like, holding hands. Like, there's one scene in particular I'm thinking of, and they're, like, at a little reception or something, and it's not even on them. I think we've, like, watched it, you know, talked about it before, that they're doing something, they're talking to each other, and they're holding hands, and they're not even the focus of what's going on. So it's like...
Right.
Yeah, that's them, and that was their emotional connection coming through, and that's why we love them so much, because it's so palpable when you're watching. But
And there's
you'll
a
have
lot
a
of
story
hand.
About the AQ.
I should. We gotta have a bad scene. I mean, I did write that adult, you know.
Yes.
Scene from the Asian Quarter about what I think really went down in the park. I should make that available
that
for
one.
Public consumption, because I think went back and read that story again recently. Like, this is really good, and it's really hot.
It's really good. Really good, yeah.
It's so good. I'm like, this is more like it. Like, if we could have FNF on Netflix now, this is the kind of thing I would want to be seeing. It would be all bath scenes and stuff like that, you know. Yeah. Well, we have almost time left, but Joanna, I want to apologize for our technical difficulties at the beginning.
Oh, no, do not even. It's okay. It's we got it together. So
we'll do this again. We will do
you.
It again, and we'll be better.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Thank you.
All right, Joanna. Well, thank you. Namaste.
Namaste. Talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.